Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Outdoor Citizen Podcast. This is episode 25. Your host today, Marty Jones, and we're joined by Brian Pucciarella, who's going to be talking about snow and avalanches. We'll also have some information about the upcoming cross-country Luminaria skiing event for Rio Frio. This is part two of our look at snow. Today, Brian Pucciarella, who we've had on our show a few times to discuss his work with SLV Go and Generation Wild, today he'll be on to talk about snow and avalanches. Brian's an avalanche education instructor for the American Institute for Avalanche Research and Education. We're going to tap into his knowledge today to learn a little bit more about avalanches and the kinds of changes he's seeing in the backcountry. Today's episode will also feature some information from a few pretty hefty climate reports released just this month. You can read more about these reports in the San Luis Valley Outdoor Report, published on alamosacitizen.com, following each episode of the podcast. The third part of our in-depth look at snow will conclude on February 6th. For now, let's have a chat with Brian. Welcome, Brian, and thanks a lot for joining us on this podcast. So tell us about avalanche education and how you got started with it.
Yeah, well, thank you, Marty. Happy to be here. So I got involved with avalanche education initially just like anyone else wanting to learn how to ski in the backcountry. For me, I grew up skiing, definitely more on ski trips. I didn't grow up in Colorado, unfortunately. But as soon as I moved here, I knew backcountry skiing is really where I wanted to be. As much fun as resort skiing is, the backcountry is just a little bit better, right?
It's completely, it's different. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It just fits more of what I like to do professionally as well. So, you know, when I moved here, I was working for Adams State University, and I was taking people into the backcountry quite often for very long trips, even in wintertime. So I initially got my first avalanche education training through work, so I could just be a part of the instructor team to take kids out during wintertime. But I had the goal from the beginning, really, that I wanted to be teaching avalanche courses, and so that has been a process I've been working through for about 10 years now.
And how often do you have these courses, these training courses that you're instructing?
Oh, man, it depends on the season. Last year, I think I was signed up for teaching 9 courses, which was a lot. So definitely dialed it back pretty significantly this year. So I'm done for the season now, and now I just get to ski, which is great.
So tell me, what kind of advancements are being made in avalanche education?
Yeah, it's a great question. And there's kind of a few different ways we can look at it. First, from a technological standpoint, the technology is actually pretty good. You know, I think this question comes up a lot, but if you look at when people are buried in an avalanche, the biggest time suck is not reliant on technology. So if you're pretty good with the beacon, you should be finding people within 30 seconds to a minute, and you should be finding out where people are buried. So that's pretty good. And there's been some improvements that have brought that down, but for the most part, like that very analog old school technology of beacons and antennas and signals, all that kind of old school technology, it works really well. So where we see the biggest time lag is just in digging people out. And so that's where, you know, it's not necessarily technology as much as it is education, practice, going out with the right team, the right number of people. All that makes a much more significant difference compared to the technology. So it's really about the education, which is what's such a big deal with backcountry skiing, is just making sure you have the knowledge of how to go about it. So we've seen some changes in the education over the last decade or so. I think we're getting better at it. But probably the biggest difference is transitioning to talking and teaching more about avalanche terrain selection and how terrain mitigates avalanches and just the human mental traps we as people get caught in. So for example, you know, if it's a big powder day and it hasn't snowed in a few weeks, everybody's pretty hungry for powder, right? And so people put themselves into dangerous situations just hunting that powder. So that's one of our cognitive traps we get caught in.
And so do you find that people are pretty receptive to these education courses that you present on the avalanches?
Yeah, I would definitely say so. I haven't seen much resistance to the courses. I know they have gotten expensive, which is probably maybe the biggest hurdle for some people. But, you know, if you kind of zoom out, traditionally, this is knowledge that was passed down from kind of generation to generation within small ski towns. And so that kind of old style was a little less inclusive, right? So while it has gotten more expensive in the last few years, that's because it's gotten a lot more expensive to become an instructor. The gear is more expensive. You know, there's a lot of reasons. Inflation, this is people's career, right? Teaching these courses. But at least now, like, that knowledge is open to a lot more people. So there's, you know, mostly pros, but some cons to it.
Good. So, Brian, tell me, what kind of avalanche year are we having this year compared to years past?
Yeah, another good question. So far, it seems like a pretty typical year. Up until this last weekend, things have been pretty slow. It's been a pretty slow year, so we've kind of seen some big lulls with a couple big storms where the avalanche danger spikes. This last weekend was pretty crazy. A lot of the state got just absolutely hammered with snow. So over the weekend, we saw 200 triggered avalanches, 50 of which were caused by backcountry travelers. So it's a big weekend.
That's a big weekend. So many of us just learned about one big avalanche on Berthoud Pass and not really these 200 slides that you're talking about that were triggered by people in the backcountry.
Yeah. Well, 50 of them were triggered by people in the backcountry.
I'm sorry, 50? Yeah.
And I think we'll see that number creep up today as that storm lifts and people get out there and kind of get eyes on everything. But, yeah, it was a big weekend because the state's been under a dry spell, right? So the snowpack's been changing, and then they just got 3-4 feet of snow in some places. And so that's just going to trigger avalanches really easily.
In terms of snowpack, when we have a snow season such as the one we're having this year, how does that affect backcountry access and avalanches in general?
Yeah. Again, I think this weekend is a really good example of these kind of trends that are happening. And so we saw this long dry spell. A lot of resorts, most resorts aren't even 100% open. So the skiing just hasn't been good this season, right? So this has been the first big weekend, and everybody showed up to ski. Holiday weekend, huge powder storms. So what we saw were massive crowds at resorts, which pushes locals into the backcountry more often. So this weekend we saw just tons of people in the backcountry and, you know, 100,000x more at resorts.
Well, and not everyone who goes into the backcountry has taken your avalanche education course. So how prepared are people when they're going out into the backcountry?
Yeah, the user demographic kind of varies on this. With skiing and snowboarding, avalanche education is doing pretty well. And so most people now in the state of Colorado recognize they need some sort of training to go out skiing in the backcountry. Where that kind of lags is the motorized community. So snowmobilers traditionally have not been great about getting avalanche education. That's changing. they're doing a really good job. They're catching up, but I think especially locally, we have a huge snowmobile scene, and there's a lot of people who don't have that avalanche training in that community.
Is there a way to ensure that more motorized travelers can get that education?
I think the word's getting out, especially, I think that was last year, we had the death in the snowmobile community. So, you know, this is where our listeners can help. If you know people who snowmobile in the backcountry or use the backcountry and they're not trained in any kind of way, definitely help push people towards avalanche training. Or going out with mentors, reading books, you know, there are some other paths, but...
Reading books is not the same. It's like reading how to fly fish. It's not the same as actually getting onto a stream and casting a rod.
Yeah, that's where the mentorship piece is super important. But it's difficult building backcountry winter skills because it's a skill set you want to build without ever making a mistake. And that's really hard to do.
Yeah, I can understand that. So have you had any, can you tell us about any personal experiences that you've had with avalanches?
I've been fortunate to not be buried or caught in any large avalanches. I've certainly been involved in some kind of smaller ones, like knee-deep avalanches that weren't too bad. But I was fortunate that when I moved here, you know, I kind of grew up within the ARRI curriculum in the backcountry, so... Kind of as soon as I was getting into the backcountry, I had that training and that decision-making framework that's so important to the ARRI education. So I've been fortunate that I haven't been caught in any big ones, yeah. So I'm super lucky, but I'm also pretty vigilant when I'm in the backcountry.
Good. And that ARRI that he's talking about is the American Institute for Avalanche Research and Education. Tell us, Brian... has the quality of snow and its texture and how it packs down, just the overall quality of snow, has that been impacted by the changing snow years?
Maybe a little bit, especially early season when you have a thin snowpack like we've had this year. It's more susceptible to change with our weather. With a thin snowpack, what typically happens is we get really cold nights and the snow crystals will start to facet, is what we call that. So instead of like really small round crystals, they'll start kind of growing into larger crystals and those don't bond as well. And so facets, you know, it's kind of like we call it recycled powder. It could be kind of fun to ski on. Except it's super dangerous. Those are our persistent weak layers, is what we call those in Colorado, which are super dangerous once more snow falls on top of them.
What do you find most fascinating or most interesting about avalanches?
I think the big thing is their unpredictability. And, you know, some of my mentors I've had in avalanche education, I've known some just really incredible instructors who, you know, they know as much as you can know about avalanches and still get caught in them, which is pretty scary, right? So there's always going to be a level of unpredictability with avalanches, and that's maybe not the appeal, but certainly something that's intriguing and just drives me and a lot of people to just try to understand it better and work on their decision making in the backcountry. So the unpredictability, I think, is a hugely fascinating piece of it.
And how are the avalanche conditions right now here in the San Juans and the Sangre de Cristos?
Yeah, things are popping off up there. So on Wolf Creek Pass, looking at my notes here, so we are at considerable, so 3 out of 5 on the danger scale at all elevations. Worried about persistent slabs and storm slabs. And so basically this big storm came in, buried some weak layers. Those early October storms we had this year are sitting down there still. the crust from that long dry spell is somewhere in the middle. And just this big heavy storm has been triggering things all over the place. So we're actually doing a little bit better near Wolf Creek than we are just at the north on Monarch Pass, which is at a 4 out of 5 high danger scale at all elevations.
It's the forecast looks like it's going to warm up a bit and it's going to be pretty dry over the next 10 days. How's that going to impact the avalanche danger?
So we'll definitely see the danger rating decrease over the next couple days, especially if it's warm, kind of consistent weather. We'll see that snow kind of compacting and bonding to the layers below it. So we'll definitely see it decreasing over the next few days. So hopefully by the weekend, it'll be a little bit safer and we can get out and look for all that powder that just fell.
But then if we get another big storm on top of that, does that take us right back to a danger level that's higher than we would expect?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's typically the cycle we're in Colorado, especially midwinter, is during dry spells, it starts healing, the snowpack starts healing a little bit, and the danger rating decreases. And then a big storm comes in, drops a few feet of snow. Especially on our snowpack near Wolf Creek, we get these big storms and the danger spikes. So that's kind of the cycle. It spikes after a storm and then it's slow to repair itself.
It sounds interesting. It does sound fascinating. It sounds like it's not for everyone, especially anyone who has not been through an education course regarding avalanches. Anything else that you'd like to tell people about for this avalanche danger and avalanche training?
Yeah, I'll just maybe counterpoint that argument with it is easily mitigated. Where people get caught and in danger is when they're really trying to push the boundaries, push the limits of what the snowpack is capable of. But, you know, right now it's a 3 out of 5 danger scale in Wolf Creek. And you can go have a lot of fun in the backcountry right now. You just have to manage the difficulty through the terrain that you're skiing. And so, yeah, just keep a low angle when the avalanche danger is high and you can still have a lot of fun.
And is there anything that you'd like to tell people about some hints for staying safe while they're out?
That's just the biggest thing, is using terrain to mitigate the danger. So if it's, you know, dangerous out there, 2, 3, 4, 5 on the danger scale, you definitely don't want to be in anything greater than 25, 30 degrees. In Colorado especially, most deaths occur when it's moderate or considerable danger out there. That's when decision-making is a little bit more ambiguous. You know a little bit less about what the snowpack is going to do. When it's a 1 or when it's a 5, you can be a little bit more sure about your decisions. But 2 and 3 is where most of the deaths and accidents occur in Colorado. So be particularly vigilant out there on those days. And, you know, just ski based on what the forecast allows, not what you want to go ski in your head.
And it's probably always a good idea to check with the Colorado Avalanche Information Center before you go out.
Absolutely. And that should be a daily habit if you're a backcountry skier.
Great. Well, thanks, Brian. One last thing. How can people get in touch with you? You said that you're through with the courses for this season, but next year, there's always a next year. So how can people get in touch with you and arrange to take an avalanche course from you?
Yeah, thanks, Marty. The easiest way would be just to email me, brianp@slvgo.com. You can get a hold of me there. And if you're a motorized user, there are still courses happening on Wolf Creek Pass through Matt Entz and his company, Mountain Skills. So there's definitely plenty of more opportunities this season as well.
Okay, very good. Well, thanks, everyone. We've been talking with Brian Pucciarella from SLV Go and Generation Wild, and an avalanche education instructor for ARRI, the American Institute for Avalanche Research and Education. Thanks for coming in, Brian. We'll be right back with a little bit about the cross-country Luminaria ski coming up on the Rio Frio weekend. You're listening to The Outdoor Citizen.
Did you know Monte Vista has more to offer than just gorgeous mountain views? It has a heart bigger than the Culebra Peak. This year alone, with the help of the Lohr Foundation, Monte Vista locals led over 50 community projects that helped make life in Monte Vista even better. Whether it was expanding the Cotter Animal Shelter or launching a student-run t-shirt shop, the Lohr Foundation was thrilled to support these efforts and wants to do even more. If you or your community group need funding for a project that can enhance life in Monte Vista, contact Yvette Atencio at IVETTE@LORFoundation.org. Let's keep working toward a better Monte Vista.
Welcome back to The Outdoor Citizen. We're going to talk a little bit about the cross-country Luminaria ski for the 2024 Alamosa Rio Frio Ice Fest. Join the San Juan Nordic Club as they help the city of Alamosa kick it off Friday, January 26th from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. for a Luminaria cross-country ski at Blanca Vista Pond. This is at Blanca Vista Park, which is north on State Avenue, just past the entrance to the Cactales Golf Course. The San Juan Nordic Club will have a 1/2 to 3/4 mile course groomed by Alamosa Park and Recreation staff on the ice of Blanca Vista Pond, and the course will be lit with luminarias. There will also be a fire to help you stay warm and some hot chocolate to sweeten the day. Bring your own skis, or you can pick up some locally at Christie Mountain Sports. Be sure you dress warm. It is one day past the full moon, so it should be relatively bright, but just in case, it's always a good idea to bring a headlamp with you as well. The San Juan Nordic Club is a nonprofit ski club whose mission is to provide groomed and ungroomed winter trails for non-motorized use by people of all ages and abilities, and to provide winter recreation, education, and community-building experiences. Depending upon the snow year, the Nordic Club grooms skiing locations at Rock Creek, Bishop Rock, Monte Vista Golf Course, and Big Meadows Campground. And, in fact, at one time, we had enough snow that we could do the cross-country at Cattails Golf Course as well. But it's been quite a few years since we've been able to do that. They provide education through ski clinics, guest speakers, and a ski swap. Community building events include a Luminaria full moon ski, sponsoring movies, and social events. So this is the 6th year of doing a Luminaria ski. It's the 3rd year at Blanca Vista Park. We've tried doing the event at the Cattails Golf Course for 3 years, but the snow was just not as reliable. In fact, I remember one year setting up the course and having to take off the skis and step around some of the dirt patches and then continue on with snow at other locations. Snow on a frozen pond, like the Blanca Vista ponds, is more reliable since it stays nice and cold because of sitting on ice. The Alamosa Recreation Center tests the thickness of ice to ensure it's safe enough to recreate on. Luminarias, if you're not familiar with them, luminarias are outdoor Christmas displays of candles and paper bags. We don't really use candles. We do use paper bags, and there's sand in the paper bags. But what we have is an electric battery-operated tea light. And so it's not flickering quite so much as a regular candle would be, but it's still very nice, and it lights up very well. The cross-country ski Luminaria event is our winter recreation interpretation of how to enjoy luminarias. It's a little late in the season, but we feel it fits in nicely with the Alamosa Ice Fest, and with it being plenty cold, it is still seasonally appropriate. So if you'd like more information, Adam Moore is the great contact for that, and you can get in touch with him by sending an email to erinadamoore at gmail.com. That's erinadamoore@gmail.com. And again, that starts at 6 o'clock on Friday, January 26th at the Blanca Vista Ponds.
You can support the work of AlamosaCitizen.com by becoming a member or by donating today. We have no out-of-town shareholders or billionaire owners. We are 100% San Luis Valley. Go to AlamosaCitizen.com and hit Become a Member or give anything that you can. We appreciate it.
Welcome back to the Outdoor Citizen. We're going to give you some upcoming outdoor events. Here's a look at some events in the new year. On Wednesday, January 24th at 5 p.m., join Matt Huber, a forecaster from the Colorado Avalanche Information Center, for this month's Forest Specialty Series. Huber is back again to share information about local avalanche conditions. He has worked with CAIC since 2018 and currently focuses on highway avalanche safety on the southeast side of the San Juan Mountains. Visit the Rio Grande National Forest website or their Facebook page for event information. If you can't make it, you can find this episode and past Forest Specialist Series events on YouTube. The annual Rio Frio Ice Fest is set for January 26th through 28th. The event lineup includes the San Juan Nordic Club's Evening Luminaria Cross Country Ski at Blanca Vista Park in Alamosa Friday, January 26th from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. The Luminaria lit track will be groomed and set by nightfall. Hot chocolate and a warm fire will be on the shore of the pond to keep everyone fueled and warm. Then the next day, Saturday, January 27th, is the Rio Frio 5K Run at 10 a.m. You can register at rioraces.com. Then you go back to the Blanca Vista Ponds on Sunday, January 28th, for a community event with ice skating and the Polar Plunge. Are you going to do the Polar Plunge this year, Owen?
I don't think so. I filmed it last year and got plenty wet. Got a big splash, so I think that was close enough. I don't know. Maybe next year. Maybe next year.
That's you kind of got the effect of the plunge anyway.
Yeah. My knees were really wet the whole time. So
yeah, excellent. They stay nice and chilly. Colorado Trout Unlimited will host an annual river conservation and fly fishing camp for teen youth at AEI Base Camp in Taylor Park, Colorado, from June 9th through 15th, 2024. The deadline to submit an application is April 1. Our local chapter, the San Luis Valley chapter of Trout Unlimited, will be sponsoring a scholarship to this annual camp. Youth aged 14 through 18 are eligible to apply for the camp. The camp provides a unique, immersive experience for teens interested in the outdoors, fly fishing, and potential conservation-related career paths. For more information, send an email to SLV Education Coordinator Kevin Milder at slvtroutunlimited@gmail.com, and Kevin will provide more information and a link to apply for the camp. Applications will require a 2-4-paragraph essay. Remember, the Valley Calendar is the most comprehensive listing of events from across the San Luis Valley. Be sure to check it out, submit your own events, and stay up to date at alamosacitizen.com. Now we have some dispatches on what it's looking like outside. Here's an update on snow conditions. In the National Weather Service's 2023 report, Alamosa recorded 4.44 inches of precipitation in 2023, making it the ninth driest year on record in Alamosa. Alamosa tallied 21.8 inches of snow in 2023, making it the 25th least snowiest year on record. The snowiest year on record was in 1973, when a snowfall total of 97.5 inches was recorded. The least snowiest year was in 1934, when just 6.4 inches of snow fell on the town. This last bout of snowstorms is bringing our snowpack to a much better spot compared to 2 weeks ago, when the upper Rio Grande Basin was sitting at just 56% of normal. We are now at 71% of normal snow water equivalent. More snow is expected this winter, which could mean a meaningful spike in the snowpack. All this snow has skyrocketed the state to 105% of snowpack levels. Keep the snow coming, we say. Wolf Creek has received just over 60 inches of snow this past week, bringing their season total to a nice 152 inches. They're reporting a fairly powdery 63-inch summit depth. Wolf Creek, Winter Park, and Steamboat are all vying for the most snow in Colorado right now. Monarch Mountain got just under 60 inches of snow this past week, and that puts their base up to 60 inches. Meanwhile, Taos Ski Valley has also seen a significant uptick in snow, reporting a 41-inch base. As you just heard Brian talk about, as of Tuesday, January 16th, avalanche danger in the South San Juans is considerable. According to the Colorado Avalanche Information Center, a special avalanche advisory is currently in effect. New snow and winds through this past holiday weekend have created dangerous avalanche conditions. They advise you to adjust plans accordingly and check the forecast frequently. Recent snow and wind continue to keep danger elevated at all elevations. Avalanches will be largest where winds have drifted new snow into thick, stiff slabs toward the east. Obvious signs of unstable snow include fresh avalanches, shooting cracks, or collapses. Avoid triggering an avalanche by traveling on slopes less than 30 degrees without steep slopes overhead. An avalanche warning has been issued for most of the state, which will continue through the week. The northern and central mountains of Colorado have high avalanche danger above, at, and below tree line. The warning is in effect for the Front Range, Summit County, and the Northern Sawatch Range. Very dangerous avalanche conditions continue after the weekend's storm. You can easily trigger avalanches large enough to bury you. Where strong winds drift snow, avalanches can release naturally. With another storm coming Wednesday into Thursday morning, the very dangerous avalanche conditions will continue until Thursday. Travel in or below avalanche terrain is not recommended. Next up, the news. Pile burns are scheduled for this month and next at the Rio Grande State Wildlife Area. Pile burns are prescribed to lessen fuel and hazards that could create larger forest fires. Colorado Parks and Wildlife and the Colorado Division of Fire Protection and Control will oversee the burns. If you see smoke coming from that area, please do not call 911. Colorado Parks and Wildlife is reporting that the 10 recently released gray wolves are all healthy, alive, and still in Colorado. They are also reporting no depredation incidents involving the wolves and livestock so far. The Colorado Climate Center released its climate assessment report that looks at historical data and compares it with years past, as well as taking a series of climatological data to project future trends. Cut down to its baseline, Colorado will continue to see increased temperatures each season and reduced precipitation in all forms, especially snow. Colorado's average temperature season after season since 1980 has increased by an average of 2.3 degrees. The winter has seen a 1 degree increase. Spring has increased by 1.7 degrees. Summer by 2.5 degrees. And finally, autumn has seen the largest increase in temperature by 3.1 degrees. And I know that we have seen that certainly here in the valley. Annually, the report says the greatest warming has been observed over the Southwest and the San Luis Valley climate regions. Data models for this report put the San Luis Valley mostly in the red. The 21st century record, which ranges from 2001 to 2022, showed an average of 3% to 23% lower snow water equivalent on April 1st than the 1951 to 2000 average. Projections show a negative 5% to negative 30% measure of snow water equivalent by the year 2050. April 1 to May 15th is historically when true mountain runoff starts to occur with a change in temperature. But projections show that by 2050, that date will shift earlier by a few days to a few weeks. That means that we will see our snow melt a little earlier as time goes on. The report says that southwestern and south central Colorado have experienced the largest magnitude of warming. The observed warming trend in Colorado is strongly linked to the overall human influence on climate and recent global warming. An article published in the journal Nature this past week laid out a full report on human influence on snowpack in the Northern Hemisphere. In this report, among many other models and data points, the authors point out that spring snowpack isn't generally as affected by temperatures, but that as the planet continues to warm above the 1 degree Celsius threshold, losses of snowpack and precipitation will only be accelerated. That brings us to the end of this episode of the Outdoor Citizen podcast. We've got our minds on snow, and we hope that you do too. Next time, we'll be with the members of the Colorado Climate Center, who just released their report, to talk about their report and what the data is telling them. The Outdoor Citizen is sponsored and supported by SLV Great Outdoors. A special thanks to Don Richmond for his song Sea Turtle, and to Daniel Boyce for the sounds of the valley's birds. Until next time, this is Marty Jones encouraging you to enjoy the longer days, treat yourself to some sunshine, and hopefully we'll see you in the outside soon.